The Scranton Republican, Scranton, Pennsylvania, Wednesday, March 29th, 1922. Bill Clem is helpless against the Sasser. Bill Clem, the Centaurian National League umpire, got the retort courteous and cutting recently, but was helpless against the Sasser. Bill found something like his match in the person of a waiter at the Menger, who wiggles a mean tongue. Clem sent back his coffee for a second time. It wasn't hot. "That coffee is as hot as it can be," said the waiter after the second trip. And Bill, finding it not exactly to his liking, declared, "You must be a con merchant around here with that line of talk." The waiter eyed him for a while with a smile and replied, "Well, Mr. Clem, I have been following your work in the National League for many years, and I believe that you are something of an expert yourself in that line." Clem sat with his mouth agape. "What did that bird say?" he asked. On getting a repetition of the retort, Clem laughed. "Well, that was a good one." But he wouldn't admit that the waiter was right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to This Week in 1920s Baseball. This is Josh, a.k.a. Bucketfoot, in the studio. Tell them who you are.
Hey, it's Matt, a.k.a. Sweetbread. We're here in Studio 11. Can't believe it.
I know. We haven't done a podcast in a long time. For a while, we were doing them totally remotely because of the pandemic. Now, we took some time off. You weren't busy during this past year at all.
No, we've been just kicking back.
Lazing about.
No, actually, I celebrated becoming a father last August. And
baby sweet.
Baby number one. Baby sweet bread. Probably one and done. But yeah, little baby sweet bread.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And she's already keeping me up at night. But,
So as... Of course, many of you remember, we would go week by week during the 1920 season. We missed the entire 1921 season.
Yeah, I think we did like one or two last year. Sorry about that.
But we're here back to talk to you about 1922, and we are not, we're breaking from format, obviously, all sorts of ways. It's not really this week. It is 1920.
I mean, you're lucky we're back at all, yeah, right? Just enjoy it.
Yeah. Wow. You're scolding our listeners. Well, we are also here to tell you that there's another guy named Sweetbread, and he is the bass player for Clem Snide.
Which ties into this week, one of this week's individuals that we're going to talk about, right?
Bill Clem. Let's back it up a little bit. What I decided to do for this episode was just kind of like out of the blue. I just read about this one particular game in 1922, and I was like, this is going to be, we got to get the gang back together just to talk about this one particular outing. And as it always is, when you just even dig into one game, you find all these cool side stories and character biographies. And I mean, they're not characters, they're real people, but we think of them as characters.
And the nicknames.
And
most
the names.
Important
things. Yeah. And I just came across some interesting things. But I didn't tell Sweetbread too much about what this particular game was.
No, I'm flying blind here.
Yeah.
But so it's going to be all off the cuff.
But I told him a couple things that I wanted to touch upon. So let me start by this. Let me start by saying this. What do you think is the... I'm putting you on the spot right up front. What do you think is the single most exciting play, type of play in baseball?
Like single play?
Yeah, not of all times, but just like type of play. Like what could happen in a game that would be
so
super exciting to see?
I have like two choices like right off the bat.
All right.
Okay, so my very first was like triple play. Okay, like I thought triple play.
Whams
but
Gans.
Then I started thinking about it a little bit more.
Whams Gans?
And I was like game-winning home run, bottom of the ninth.
But, okay.
So those are my two choices.
Those are two good choices, and maybe...
But there's another play that I think...
Those are maybe better than my questions. Maybe that better than my answer. Remember when Wham Gans got an unassisted triple play in the World Series?
1920, yeah.
That was exciting. All right, another...
My third choice.
What's another type of exciting thing a batter can do when he is at the plate?
Bunt?
I mean,
you said least exciting, right?
Oh, no. Most exciting.
Most exciting.
Oh, also bunting is super exciting.
Charging the mound?
Oh, man. These are all better answers than mine. What I What I thought of, what I'm hinting at here, is the rare inside the park home run.
Yes. Okay. That is incredibly exciting.
Incredibly exciting play. Very rare. And so what I found here is a game, April 29th, 1922, where the New York Giants did something that will never be done again. I can guarantee it, unless some future space version of baseball changes the dynamics of the modern game.
And the dimensions, probably, of the ballparks.
And the dimensions of the ballparks.
I'm assuming this is Polo Grounds.
No, this was Braves Field, because this was Giants at Braves. And what they did was hit four inside the park home runs in one game. That is unheard of, right?
That's just craziness.
That is straight up craziness. And so
I don't think there's four players in any single lineup today that could make it around the bases without falling over in one go.
Well, I believe that two of them actually did it twice. So
it was the Giants.
Yeah, the Giants. So, and one of the players on the Giants also that day. I'm going to ask you another question. What is the super rare, not super rare, but rare and exciting thing that a player can do as a batter during the course of a game?
A cycle.
Exactly. So Ross Youngs, remember Ross Youngs?
I do.
Ross Youngs hit for the cycle, including an inside the park home run. And let me just hit you with some of the other names. Just to bring it back to the old phase. I mean, you can guess one other guy who hit an inside the parker. Do you remember the Giants slugger with possibly the greatest nickname?
Not Bill Terry. That was later, right? I'm just trying to think.
High Pockets Kelly with the inside the parker. Ross Youngs, it said, had two homers. High Pockets Kelly had two also. Yeah, and then it says Dave Bancroft had two homers. Oh, he's on the Giants. So if Ross Youngs, that must mean that was his second of the year, not his second in the game. That can't be right either. Who did this shoddy research? Here's the people who hit home runs: Ross Youngs, High Pockets Kelly, Dave Bancroft. So those dudes are all on the Giants. Yeah. So High Pockets hit two. And then Ross and Dave hit one.
Two. I mean, two in one game.
High Pockets
two
Kelly.
In one season nowadays would be
unheard of.
Would be unheard of.
So, yes, where this game took place was the old Boston Stadium. So we're not talking Fenway here. We're talking Braves Field, which people.
Yeah, and you asked me to look into the field.
Because I know you're always.
I forgot.
Oh, but I know you're always interested in, like.
I love ballparks.
Ballparks and the specifics. I mean, there's probably not much you would have found other than that the dimensions are, like, ludicrous. I mean, it's like 500 feet to center field. So, like, if there was going to be a game where a team was going to hit four inside the parkers, it would have to be. But even still, that's crazy. There must have been some odd angles out there in the outfield.
I mean, I can imagine the Polo Grounds because I've seen enough photos of it.
Yeah.
Where it just keeps going and going and going.
I think it was many years before anyone hit an outside of the park home run at Braves Field. Like, there were entire seasons where no home runs were hit there at all. But I was happy to see High Pockets' name. I was happy to see Dave Bancroft. Let's just run down some of these other names just to take it back. Heinie Groh.
Heinie Groh.
Enjoy a good Heinie Groh. Johnny Rawlings, which is like a made-up baseball player from a Japanese comic book. Johnny Rawlings. Irish Musel was in this game. Good name. Ralph Shinners, who I don't think we heard of. I don't think he was in the 1920s season.
I don't think so either.
Frank Snyder was their catcher. And their pitcher was Phil Douglas, who was he was the pitcher in that one game that we were actually just talking about from 1920. And I think I called him Spittin' Phil Douglas, but I don't think that's actually his nickname. I think
it is now, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's Shufflin'. I think it was like actually Shufflin' Phil. But for some reason, I misremembered it as Spittin' Phil. So, and get this. The pitcher for the Giants in this game was named Claude Johnnard. Do you remember the last name?
Maybe he was related to Bubba Johnnard.
Maybe he was his brother. I looked it up. He was.
He was?
Yes.
I love Bubba Johnnard.
So do I. I knew you'd be excited to know that we somehow missed his brother, Claude, was also in the game. So just to set the stage fully for this game here, April 29th, so this was an early season game in Boston, April 29th, 1922, New York Giants 15, Boston Braves 4. 15 runs was a huge offensive outpouring in this era. And, you know, you had a guy hit the cycle and you had a guy hit four. I mean, you had a team hit four inside the park home runs. So, like I said, I was just like, well, let's just like, real quick, let's talk about the Braves team. So one of our favorite pitchers, Rube Marquard, was the pitcher for the Braves. Hod Ford was the second baseman. I always enjoy Hod. Hank Gowdy, the catcher. Walton Cruz, Fred Nicholson. A lot of these guys are not super known to me. The Braves were not like the studs.
They were not good.
Yeah.
They were not a perennially good team.
They had an aging Rube Marquard. Just like looking through the box score, we also came across, I don't know why, I just click on everything when I'm in Baseball Reference. And I clicked on the umpire, Bill Clem.
The Clemster.
Yeah. And so I just peeked at his like page and I was like, this guy has a story, but I didn't really know anything about it. So I asked, no, I can fly blind. And Sweetbread can tell me a little bit about this umpire.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised to find a good amount of information on him. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more out there. And I actually have a couple articles here, too, that we can look at, or I can read one of them at some point. Or did I just read it at the beginning? I don't know.
The magic of editing.
So I guess he's like the most well-known umpire of that era. I don't know if we would compare him to like somebody today. Like, I mean, I don't know. I can always think of Joe West, even though he's such a bad umpire, but he's just the one that comes to mind today.
Joe West is really good at like making himself the story.
Yeah. He's there. Joe West is always there. So Bill Clem.
Do you know that Joe West is also a singer?
In the Clem.
No, but he actually is like a country singer.
Oh, like actual Joe West, not like.
No, not the Joe same West. Name as, but the umpire, Cowboy Joe West, has like albums out. And the former director of the Easton Library, Andy Levis, who's like a family friend, is a guitarist, and he played on Joe West's country album.
I think we should do like an entire podcast on Joe West.
We should do a
and
deep dive.
Have like his music.
I kind of find him annoying, though.
The music or
no,
the umpire?
The umpire. Joe, I just don't like when an umpire makes the story about himself. Like Joe West is, and he's always like, umpires are, you're not supposed to know their names. I mean, right? He's always...
I want like a star umpire. I want like an umpire that like dresses weird, all right. That like has like a bow tie.
I would like that.
And just has antics.
But I feel like he's trying to like make himself famous so he can spin it into like notoriety so he can like get appearance fees and like have people buy his albums and stuff.
So you're saying he's really smart. Like he's doing some really smart like, self-promotion.
He's outlandish
by being
on purpose.
Bad, by being a bad umpire.
Yeah.
All right, so I digress. So, Joe West, go listen to his music. We highly recommend it. I've never heard it.
Ignore it.
Yeah.
Ignore him. Listen to Andy's solo album, which, by the way, is called Leave Us Alone. His last name is Levis. His solo album, Leave Us Alone. That's good.
That is really good.
Shout out to Andy Levis.
So, all right. So, Bill Clem, I guess he, I don't know how he kind of got into umpiring other than the fact that his uncle, no, I don't know. We're gonna have to edit this out too. I'm totally unprepared today. Okay, so
keeping it in.
Okay, so the big thing that I found about Clemster, he was born in 1874, Rochester, New York. Died in 51 in Miami. But he did actually umpire for 37 years. He was a National League umpire. Again, just as a reminder, the leagues were very separate at the time. They only came together for the World Series, so. I think players as well as umpires really didn't change leagues. He was from 1905 to 1941 in the National League, which 37 years. He's a Hall of Famer. But the things that really jumped out for me were how high he was paid, first off. So I think it was 1905. He made the equivalent, and I looked up in 2020 numbers, he made the equivalent of like $70,000, which to me seemed like an outrageous number for an umpire at the time.
Yeah,
because
That's way more than the average player.
And because it was something like $1,000 or a couple $1,000s a year, which was, I think, most of the stars were making at the time, right, Josh? Like, I don't think that was
right.
less than most baseball players. Probably more than most
of them. It's more than Gehrig made, I guarantee it.
Yeah, because weren't we talking about how Ruth was going to get $20,000 the 1 year? And, like, he... But that was, like, 20 years later or something. So, I don't know. I thought that was pretty wild that they were paying umpires that well at the time. The other thing is he hated to call games. I'm sorry, to, like, postpone games.
Oh, he would play it no matter
he would,
what?
Yeah, he would love... he would love, like, the rain. Yeah, they called him a wet weather umpire.
You think he just like had other stuff to do?
Yeah.
Each team. To be honest, I forget the, like, 6 degrees of separation that I did to get from one guy to the next. But I came across the name of Jim Thorpe in 1919 season. I think somebody in this... someone who played in this game, this is also extremely well researched, someone who played in this game broke a record that I think was previously held by Jim Thorpe. And I just, like, kind of, like, well, forgot in a way that Jim Thorpe was, like, actually a Major League Baseball player. Like, I knew he played every sport and he was a great athlete. And, you know, if you're from this part of Pennsylvania like we are, there's a town close by called Jim Thorpe, despite the fact that he wasn't from here or
had never been there, nothing that connected the town with him whatsoever.
Was he buried there?
Well, what happened is he died in California. I think he died of a heart attack in California, and then he was moved to Oklahoma to his where his family was, because he was from Oklahoma originally. Of course, Jim Thorpe, the Native American. His grandfather was a very famous Chippewa warrior named Black Hawk. A couple years after he was buried in Oklahoma, the towns of Mauchunk and East Mauchunk decided to... I don't have the research in front of me, but I don't know how they figured out how to convince whoever had him, I guess the family, to move him to Pennsylvania.
They, like, bought his corpse?
Yeah, they, like, bought his corpse. They decided to come together as a town and join as one town.
I mean, that's no excuse.
And rename themselves Jim Thorpe.
I mean, I'm all for Mauchunk solidarity, but I'm not for buying.
There's been some revisionism recently, Josh, where they want to go back to Mauchunk. And, you know, there's definitely, you know, the old heads that want to stay as Jim Thorpe.
I know, because it's... Now it's rightfully illegal to move Native American artifacts or, God forbid, remains from their resting place. So you couldn't now. You couldn't, like...
No, and I don't think anybody, you know, Native American or otherwise, would be like,
no.
Oh, we're going to buy your body and rename our town after you.
I mean, in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's complicated. I mean, it's a very not even complicated. It's a very specific history. But I'm like, I'm just thinking of myself. Like, if I died in some town in California, like, wanted to buy my corpse and, like, just name their little town Josh Burke, California, like, I would be fine with it. It's a hot take.
Or, you know, music best plug, we can name the...
Yeah, the Plots.
The Plots out here, the Burke Plots, of course. After Bucketfoot, after Bucketfoot's father.
I thought you were going to say not after Bucketfoot kicks the bucket. And buried me under Payroll Plaza and name it Burke Plots.
We can a new Joe West song. Bury me under Payroll Plaza. I mean, Jim Thorpe is like a name that, like, came up so often when I was a kid.
Right.
You know, as, like, this historic mythic figure in American sports history. But I think I had forgotten, like, a lot of it. So let me just go over, like, a quick bio of him.
And I'll say the reason he didn't come up earlier is his last game in MLB was 1919.
Yeah, but believe it or not, in my research, he is one of his last games in this particular iteration in I think, minor league ball was 1922. So we're actually kind of, it's kind of timely that we're talking about Jim Thorpe right now. And I found an article about him. It's an opinion piece The Newcastle Herald from June 13th talking about how he was released and the curveball was responsible for that and that baseball was his poor sport. So let me just go over real quick his bio. So
Jim Thorpe couldn't hit the curveball?
He couldn't hit a curveball. He was the Michael Jordan of – Michael Jordan was the Jim Thorpe of
– But also I couldn't –
Yeah.
Let's make it about me again.
Yeah.
Also, I couldn't hit the curveball. And I was a multi-sport athlete.
All right.
I'm the Jim Thorpe.
You're the Jim Thorpe of the Bethlehem Mary Public
Library. And Michael Jordan is the Josh Burke of Chicago. All right.
All right. So so he was, again, from Oklahoma. And he went to the infamous Carlisle Indian School in Pennsylvania. There's a lot of information about that out there.
So he did have a PA connection.
Yeah, I did have a PA connection, correct. And then he was discovered by Pop Warner to try out for the football team. And he was in, you know, probably the best football player of that era.
That's crazy that Pop Warner is a real person. Because you just think of Pop Warner League. It's like a guy being named Little League.
Yeah.
Like that name is like so famous. I forgot that was an actual guy.
Yeah, it's
a real football dude.
And his name was Pop, and he's from Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania is pretty important.
And his given name was Pop. When he was born, he looked like a tiny old man.
His name was Glenn, which, I don't know. We don't need to go there with the Glens. Sorry if there's any Glens legend.
There definitely is at least one on top Glenn.
Yeah. So he played football. He was a highly successful football player. And then he went to the Olympics. And he went to Stockholm in 1912. And competed in a number of different track events and was highly, highly successful. I don't have his statistics here. But after this, he's kind of like the talk of the nation. And he's this huge prospect. And there's a bidding war. The Giants sign him to $6,000 a season, which was pretty outrageous at the time, especially for somebody that, according to this, they had never seen him play a baseball game when they signed him.
So Jim Thorpe got signed by the New York Giants.
By the New York Giants in 1913.
For
over $100,000 a year.
For like a Bill, and again, like, Bill Clem style contract.
You shouldn't look at like baseball salaries because they've outstretched inflation
by 100,000 times.
But so that was a lot of money back
then. I think that's Bill Clem money.
Yeah. More than Bill Clem.
Bill Clem was the Jim Thorpe of umpires. Jim Thorpe was the Michael Jordan of California.
All right. So, and he knocked around with the Giants for a few years and was terrible. I mean, he wasn't terrible, but he hit like around 200.
Pretty bad for that era, for sure.
Yeah, and they didn't really use him that much. By the 1916 season, they had separately using him. He got traded to, or he got loaned. Again, I don't know about these loans to the Reds. It was a little bit better. And then finally, he ended up with the, guess who they ended up with? It's topical from today.
The Braves?
The Braves.
The
Correct. And he actually hit .327 in half a season in 1919.
I wonder if he had any discussions about them changing their name. I can't believe they're still called the Braves. It was racist in 1920.
And their ballpark was nicknamed the Wigwam.
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, I did know that. They called it that for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still awful. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I had this kid. I had like one of those red tomahawk things that they used to sell. Remember when the styrofoam ones or the foam. So pretty much by the 1920s, he's in minor league ball, and he's out of baseball by the late 20s. And then he actually becomes like a bit of a movie star in the 1930s and 40s.
He was a good looking dude. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
You got a little overexcited. Oh, definitely.
Oh, most definitely. He's an All-American in my book.
He's a six-tool prospect.
Steely Dan. Yeah.
Look at those eyes. Steely gaze.
So, yeah, that's a little quick bio of Jim. So, yeah, the lesson is he, you know, is really known for being this multi-sport athlete, but really wasn't the greatest baseball player.
But at that time, the NFL didn't exist.
No, so but there was yeah, there was play. Professional base football, but I think it was not anywhere near the amount of how well paid he would have been in baseball.
Right. So yeah. You were like an Olympian and a football player.
Football player was football was more of a college sport.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But then if you wanted to make it as a pro athlete.
And what I didn't really what also happened is because he took some money playing some semi-pro stuff, he got his medal stripped from Stockholm.
What?
And probably wasn't, he probably at some point wasn't eligible to go back and play more college football. I don't know if he played all 4 years or anything. I don't know what the rules were at the time for how many years you could play college football.
I think Jim Thorpe has been poorly treated. This is a hot take. I feel like, who cares if he made some money?
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like he was pretty revered at the time. I mean, articles here. But then I saw some other stuff, where it was definitely a little racist towards him.
So it looks like the 1 year he played approximately a full season was 1917. He played in 103 games, had 338 plate appearances, 73 hits. So that's like a .237 batting average. But then he didn't walk a lot either. So his OBP was .275. He had 40 RBIs, 12 steals, 10 triples. I mean, he was a productive player that year. But
so you're saying that maybe he didn't get enough of a chance at the time?
I don't know. I just feel like generally people should have been cooler to Jim Thorpe. That's my take. It's not based on statistics. It's just based on people.
Well, I mean, you're reading the statistics to me, and that's his third year in the league, fourth year in the league.
Yeah, but then he really, you're not going to stick around with an OBP of like, even in that era of like, a 275.
No, I think even the shortstops are hitting like 250 at that time.
And his slugging percentage was .357. His OPS was .632. His OPS plus was .96, which just basically means you're a slightly below average player offensively. Even though he had, I don't know how he was as a defensive player. He obviously had speed. I mean, he was an Olympian. He stole 12 bases.
What was that movie with Brendan Fraser, The Scout?
I don't know it.
That was the one. I can't believe you don't know this movie. It's a really bad movie. It's terrible.
I hate Brendan Fraser, too. I have like a real aversion to that guy.
Okay. So, all right. So, and it's also with Albert. I think Albert Brooks is in it. I don't know if you hate him, too.
Oh, of course.
So,
come on.
All right.
I love
so,
Albert Brooks.
The plot is basically I forget exactly where he's from, but he's this like really weird dude. He's like got mental issues, like psychologically mental issues. But he throws like 100 and something miles an hour.
Hmm.
And I think the Yankees like basically just sign him like based on his ability to throw the ball like that fast. And it's just, I don't know, it made me think of Jim Thorpe when these Giants basically signed him. They didn't even see him play once.
Yeah, they just knew he was an athlete. They thought they could make him into a ball player.
Or maybe he was a gate draw, At the time,
true.
That was an important thing.
He was a celebrity.
Tickets were a big percentage of their
right.
Their a team's revenue.
There was no cable deal. And he was, especially like when he signed with the Braves, like they were so bad. And teams were out, once you were out of it like so early, there was no chance to come back. There was no wild card. There was no divisions. Like you needed a reason for people to come. Looks like his career WAR was 0.7. It's not super good for the greatest athlete.
It's not very
of all
good,
time.
Is it?
When he first came up, he was really bad, though. He really did strike out a lot. And
I feel like at that time they probably were like, okay, we paid him all this money, we're just going to put him right in there. We're going to get all our money out of it, in terms of people coming to the stadium. Like he probably could have used a few years of seasoning.
Yeah, he was mostly on the Giants, and then he said he went to the Reds, but then back to the Giants. And then just spent that last year with the lowly Braves. But he ended up actually playing a lot that year. I mean, he had 62 games across the two leagues in his
Like Jordan would have been, would have figured it out? Like, if he had been given more time? Not even if he had started younger, but, just at that age, at that time.
Oh man, that's a tough question. I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I mean,
I remember at the time, maybe it was wishful thinking because I was such a fanboy.
And I have total respect for Jordan, obviously.
Yeah.
And you want to be like, yeah, if that guy put his mind to anything, he could do it. But I then I also, this is like based on like obviously like whatever limited information, but like the ABs I saw where he looked lost, he looked really lost. And you're like, he looked like, you know what I mean? I see high school kids who read the ball out of the pitcher's hands better than he did. He just did not know when a breaking ball was coming. And that take, he could have learned, but I mean, it would have it takes years to get good at that.
Yeah.
And to try to learn against top level talent, it's just, you don't, there's no time to figure it out. Here's what's interesting though. Looking back again at, So Thorpe joined the Giants in 1913 as a 26-year-old. His last year here with the Braves, he played in 60 games, and he actually batted .327, and his OBP was .360, and his slugging was .429.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not bad.
No, that year, I mean, and by any measurement, .327.
So he's like, what, 32, 33 by that
time? That's his year 32 season. His OPS plus was 143, which is the highest. No, he hit, well, the one year they listed, he only played two games. But that's the that's the best year of his career. 67 total bases. And it's actually very, So it lists him as like.
He is a good looking guy. I just have to say that again. Just want to make sure that's
every
known.
Time that picture comes up, it's like.
Do yourself a favor and look. Just Jim, Google, if you're listening.
Just Google Jim Thorpe.
Have like a photo of Jim Thorpe, like just. On your screen or wherever you're using while you're listening to this.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why he finally seemed to figure it out and then retired from baseball. You know what that is? That is a cliffhanger. That is a teaser for a future episode.
Well, sounds like we're going to have to get like a Jim Thorpe book.
Sounds like we're going to have to.
Maybe we'll just have to get a Jim Thorpe expert onto the podcast.
We're
going
to have to like visit a library and see... What if we got a Jim Thorpe expert on and all they wanted to do is talk about how handsome he was? They had like no other
just like talk about the Jim Thorpe haircut.
I need a haircut. I might go with a Thorpe.
The Thorpean.
Might be able to pull it off.
So I also have, in tradition, I have the standings for this date in 1922.
All right, let's
we want to go back in time a little bit.
Yeah, let's hear it. For which date? April 29th or the June date?
For the June, for today. Today is June.
Today, the June date.
The June date.
I should have just called it today.
For today, the June date, 1922, June 2nd. We'll run through them. That way our listeners can get a little picture of what's been going on in the Major League season, other than, you know, the Clemster and.
Can I guess?
Okay. So I'm going to give you, I'll give you a guess. See if you can guess who's in the top and who's in the bottom of each league.
Well, I think this game we covered the top and the bottom, the Giants and the Braves in the National League.
You're really close. The Braves are in second to last because there's one team that seems to perennially be in last place. And
is it the Browns?
The Slobs are doing great, and they're actually in the American League.
Oh yeah, yeah. Is it the Pirates or the Phillies? The Phillies?
The Philadelphia Phillies.
I should have guessed.
So the Giants are in first.
I guess I think of St. Louis because of the Cardinals. I thought they were. Who did the Browns become? That's all.
I think they became the Orioles.
Oh, okay. So they're obviously AL.
I think it's the same. Yeah, it's the same.
So the New York franchise. Giants.
Yeah, the New York baseball Giants.
Crushing it in 1922. What's their record?
They're 27-18. This is not even 2 months into the season.
Yeah, they started a little later.
They started a little late. So that's a .600 winning percentage. They're 27-18. And the Pirates, I think, last year? Again, I don't remember. It was 1920. The Pirates were doing pretty well.
The Pirates started out super hot in 1920.
Yeah,
they were leading for a while.
Good pitching.
Good pitching.
And then the Cardinals were in third place. And I don't know, were they the Robins at the time still? I probably were. The Brooklyn Robins. That's a great name for a baseball team.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about Cleveland? Formerly known as the Indians. We haven't that happened since we actually had a podcast recently. And I know because we're so name obsessed.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the Robins were because that was the manager's name.
Right. But I'm just saying, can we talk about I hate the name Guardians because I think it's stupid.
I just think but you can't be objecting to the change.
I'm not objecting to the change, but they could have done so much better.
Yeah.
Like the Spiders, Josh.
I mean,
the name was there already.
But they were terrible.
Like, so the Nationals did something great. They went back to an old name, right? And that's just a classic name, Nationals.
Yeah.
But the Guardians?
I think that the...
What are they guarding?
They're guarding Cleveland. from spiders.
Like what does a guardian do in baseball? There's no guardian. All right, we don't have to go in. You're not as passionate about this.
I am passionate about it. No, I'm not. I don't think Guardians is a bad name. And I was just happy that they changed it because I was so tired of the Chief Wahoo. It was so disturbing that I was just happy they changed it. And I felt like they were going to go around and around forever. And then they finally, settled on something. And I'm just like, not. I just like, don't.
You don't really care.
I just I'm not that mad about it. I still don't.
Guardians is just too generic.
It's just too generic. I don't really think of them as the Guardians, to be honest. I just think of them as Cleveland, I guess, in my head. My suggestion was the Cleveland Whippets. Like, the dog is a Whippet, you know? But also, Devo is from Ohio.
I mean, I love Devo. But, like, I hear Whippet, and I hear think about something else.
Oh,
but,
like whipped cream nitrous sniffing?
Not from experience, but just knowing about it. Yeah.
But that's also popular in Ohio.
There's nothing else to do.
One would imagine.
Guard your baseball diamond.
We're zinging on Ohio.
Terrible jokes today.
The Cleveland Whippets would be a cool name.
I think it would be too.
The Whippet is a cool looking dog.
You could have like a big thing of whipped cream as your mascot, just like running around.
Or a Whippet, a dog. Or a dog with like a whipped cream hat.
Dogs do like whipped cream.
I mean,
that is a scientific fact.
They love
so.
It. Wait, I know we're in the middle of the standings, but we've already digressed far enough. But 1921 World Series. We did not cover the 1921 season.
We did not.
But can I put you on? Put you on the spot again. Do you know who won it?
I do.
Who won?
The Giants won.
And who did they defeat?
The Yankees. Okay, so yeah, National League. Cincinnati is 25-25. The Cubs are 21-23. The Braves are 19-25, and the Phillies are 15-28.
So
at this point in the 1922 season, the Phillies are 11 games out of first place.
Mm.
What are they this year?
About the same.
Yeah, that's pathetic. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say.
100 years later,
you stink, Phillies. If you're listening to this,
and they've spent their payroll's a little higher this year.
Just a touch higher than Bill Clem's contract that year.
Yeah. They're 12 and a half out.
All right. So can you guess? This is a little bit harder, I think, especially for the bottom. I'll give that's your clue. The bottom is hard.
The bottom of the
American League. I think you can probably guess the top of the AL.
Well, we know it's the Yankees.
Yes, that's correct.
And who's the worst team in the American League? The A's?
No, they're actually having a 19-22, but yeah, they would have been a good guess.
They were boom and bust, so they were either good or bad. Like
this
really
team
bad.
Was riding high, and then something unfortunate.
Wait, was this the Cleveland team?
No, they're still pretty decent.
Because something unfortunate did happen.
Okay, I don't know if it's unfortunate. It's kind of their own fault. But this team was the best team in baseball, and then just a couple years later is in the cellar.
The Tigers?
No. Didn't we start off this podcast talking about this team?
It was so long ago.
Okay. I'll give you another clue.
Okay.
This team had a player that some people think should be in the Hall of Fame, but is not.
I mean, that's every team. Come on.
Because he got banned from baseball.
Oh, the White Sox.
Yeah.
Duh. Yeah. Of course. The Chicago White Sox, a.k.a. Black Sox.
Black Sox.
Correct. Lost all of their players to the investigation that followed the 1919 series. Yeah, that was good clues. I was missing the.
You're right. We started off with Babe Ruth. That was our impetus for the first episode. We did talk a lot about.
But the White Sox were obviously Sox as well. Yeah. Huge news of the day, and their fall from grace was profound. So that's not surprising that they're in last place. Mm-hmm.
But our favorite slobs, they're in second place, 29-19, one and a half out.
Nice.
So. Yeah, Sisler. We
got the.
You'll have to put the Sisler watch in that one.
So we got the battle of the New York teams looking for a rematch here in 22.
Yeah, and, we'll see what happens.
I think that's as good a place as any to wrap up this long awaited return to form with Sweet Bread and Bucketfoot.
I don't know if I would call it a return to form, Josh.
Attempt to return to form.
Yeah, no. No, we're doing our best here.
We have a sound engineer today, Keith. You hear him, everyone. We've got to give Keith a
name. Yeah, we got to give Keith big props because we feel professional, even though we don't sound professional. We feel it. It's all about how you feel.
You guys are the stars, right?
But I think we need to give Keith a 1920s nickname. I'll put it up on the Twitter for suggestions. All right.
Yeah. He was a pitcher.
That's true.
He threw really hard. Mm-hmm. So consider that.
And this has been
This Week
in 1920s Baseball.
See ya.
See ya. There it is.
Like, if we had, like, a bare-knuckle boxing match after this podcast, and I...
Me and you?
...beat you, I could take the nickname of Bucketfoot if I wanted to.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to allow that to happen. But, like, if I struck out Michael Jordan with, like, my curveball, then everyone would have to call me Michael Jordan.
Or MJ, yeah. Or his airness. We should just call you his airness.
Yep. I like it. Print it.